You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I'm a big star, you know.
Listen live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.
It's DCR.
All I said to you yesterday is, what football team do you root for? And you really went off the handle.
Who's your team? Who's your man?
I went off the handle because we're looking at each other in the Zoom, and I can see you, and I can see the glint in your eye, which has got that tenor to it.
Oh, why would you ask me that question? Well, who's your team? Oh, no, I did say who my team is. Did you say who you are? It's okay to root for that team?
That was your tenor.
This is DCR.
If you asked the Atlanta Hawks who they would rather play, the Knicks or the Heat, they would say the Atlanta Hawks.
But the Hawks, they would say the Heat.
Excuse me.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Carlin in for Canty. I love you're setting up to this big take. If you asked the Hawks who they'd prefer to play, the Knicks or the Heat, their response would be the Atlanta Hawks.
It's amazing.
Derrick Henry and the Purple Birds.
That's right. That's exactly what it was. Let's hear those back-to-back, because I think that wasn't as great as the Purple Birds, but that was a pretty good one there, Carlin.
It wasn't bad because of the seriousness, you're right, because of the tone in my voice.
Right, because you were setting up like a magical point. If you asked the Hawks.
I wouldn't say magical, but I was setting up a very serious, direct point.
I mean, it was rumbling there. Like, you were heading downhill. Like, you saw where you wanted to finish, you were gaining steam, you were gaining traction, if you asked the Hawks who, in fact, they would want to play, the Knicks or the Heat, their answer would be the Atlanta Hawks.
If you asked the Atlanta Hawks who they would rather play, the Knicks or the Heat, they would say the Atlanta Hawks.
Derrick Henry and the Purple Birds, the Ravens, against Derrick Henry and the Tennessee.
See, and it's not because it was me. I'll be the first to tell you when mine's better, but Pete's will always be better because nobody on the planet calls them the Purple Birds.
The Purple Birds. Never have you heard it one time, right?
Not once.
Not once. The Purple Birds. Because he was trying to make it such a big deal, and then he just completely soiled
himself. Derrick Henry and the Purple Birds, the Ravens, against Derrick Henry and the Tennessee.
And then just the juxtaposition
and the
against
music.
Derrick Henry. Yeah.
Derrick Henry and the Purple Birds. The Purple Birds. Frank Isola, 6:30 this morning. CMT at 6:45. I want to get into the baseball, but people are kind of lined up here, and they want to, I don't agree or disagree with you, Carlin, because this take is just, for lack of a better word, it's preposterous that you think the Hawks would take the Heat over the Knicks.
I do. And, you know, listen, you can call me whatever you want. I've been called worse.
I'm not calling you names. I don't think you're a bad guy.
You're saying what I have to say is not on your mind.
No. In this one instance, I think your take is hideous.
And I think you're hideous.
Well, that's not nice. You know what? That's just mean-spirited.
I wouldn't call it mean-spirited.
No. I look at your one take and have a problem with it. Now you look at everything that I encapsulate and you don't like me.
The very essence of you sickens me. How about that?
This is why Han hates you. This is why Jay Will hates you. I mean, this is the genesis of why these guys don't like you.
There is a list of people that hate me for things that I have not done. It's amazing. I was telling the guys during the break, there's another prominent ESPN personality who's never cared for me.
Really?
Yes. And
who is that?
None of my own.
Give us a hint. Give us a hint of who that is.
He just re-signed a contract yesterday.
Okay.
Chris Berman. Chris Berman does not care.
Why does he not like you?
It's a long, long story, and it involves my previous job as a producer back in the day.
And he still remembers that he hates you.
Yes, he does. At least in 2015, he did when he smacked me on the back of the head at the All-Star game.
By the way, Chris Berman will be on KJZ 905 this morning.
Yes, he will.
And only because you're not hosting. I think if you were hosting, he would not be on KJZ this morning. All right.
Just briefly, it was.
He is on KJZ.
He is.
Yes.
He is.
Back, gone.
Yeah, tell us.
Just briefly,
don't make it briefly. Really,
briefly, he was to be a guest on Mike and the Mad Dog back in the day.
Okay.
One of the hosts didn't necessarily want to do it because they don't like having hosts on. They prefer to analysts. And I said, hey, do me a favor, put him on. He comes on, and then, you know, it was just kind of a back and forth, not great spot. And then later, he asked, why doesn't said host want me on? And I said, they just don't like having hosts. Meanwhile, the other host, Chris, said, listen, I don't know. I know Colin hates you.
Get a rating!
Really?
Yeah.
Goodbye.
That was a vintage dog move, is to blame the producer.
Wow.
When it was clearly somebody else's issue.
Wow. So and that's how long ago?
That's 20 years ago.
And he still doesn't like you from that.
In 2015, that was still the case.
Really?
And it's by sight. Like if you said my name, he probably wouldn't know.
But when he saw you in 2015, he did not like you.
No. Absolutely not.
What happened in 2015?
We were online at the All-Star game to get something to eat, shockingly for me. And somebody came over and was chatting me up for a second, and apparently it was my turn in line. And he smacks me on the back of the neck and says, hey, people are trying to eat here. And it was not like something that you would just normally tap, excuse me. You know, he
smacked you?
I mean, you know, not hard. But, you know, just kind of swiped across your back.
just swiped across your back.
You know what I mean?
I don't know that I've ever seen anyone online for food hit someone in front of them to say, go, it's your turn.
It was. So I can only assume that it was from that.
You should have fought him right there on the spot.
No way. I love people. I don't want to take it out on them.
They don't love you.
But this is my point. How is that my fault?
It's a fair bill.
How is that my fault?
Well, you know what? It's happened numerous times now. This is not isolated. Han doesn't like you. Jay Williams doesn't like you. Chris Berman doesn't like you. You know? It's a lot of ammunition, Carlin.
Well, yeah, and a lot to talk about with the therapist later.
All right. You have that later today?
Yeah, I do. Good. I can fill you in if you want. We can conference Rick in. If you'd like.
Oh, I would love that.
Would you go to therapy with me?
I absolutely would.
Let's go. That was
he could go all the way.
Oh, my goodness. All right, Ray in Bayonne. Good morning, Ray. You're next.
Would you go to therapy with me?
No, I didn't. But good morning to you, too. Actually, back to the topic. If I'm the Hawks, if I'm management or coaching, I'll pick the Knicks, actually. Playoff tempo comes down to a half-court game. I feel that the Heat bench is way better than the Knicks bench. And the other thing is that I can't, even though the Heat's been having a great season, their goals eventually is going to come back to earth. Where, you know, I feel about that roster. Especially when you have the Heat and you got the shooters and you got Bam, even though that Bam matched well with Randall, I feel that the Heat are deeper roster wise than the Knicks. Coaching, I'm going to give the Holstra a little bit of the edge because championships and everything else. But if I'm the Hawks and I want to play a short series, I'll pick the Knicks, definitely.
I think that, listen, Atlanta would be just concerned about trying to win the series. I mean, and there are a bunch of different reasons. I mean, playoff experience, coaching. I mean, they're a more talented team than the Knicks, the Miami Heat.
Chris, do you agree with that?
I
agree that they are a more talented team. I absolutely agree that they are.
Let's go to Phil in Brooklyn. Good morning, Phil. You're on 98.7.
Hey, thanks for taking my calls, guys. I agree. As an athlete, you can beat a team during the regular season, and it does matter. But it gets to the point where, let's take it to the Giants. When the Giants went on their run, the Cowboys have beaten them twice that season. Green Bay had beaten them, and New England. But to me, I had confidence that the Giants could win because they were competitive in all those games. So just because you beat a team in the regular season doesn't mean that that team can't say to themselves, you know what, yeah, we lost to them in the regular season, but there's just a couple of things that we need to fix in order to beat them because we can compete. Now, you have to give Miami credit because they have the experience. That is why I believe, and we're trying to pick who Atlanta would want to play, that they would rather play the Knicks. Because the Knicks have, as much as I love them and the regular season has been good, they don't have the experience in the postseason.
That's a fair point. Animal. That I absolutely 100% agree with. The Knicks do not have the postseason experience of the Miami Heat.
I'm basing my take, Dave,
strictly on style of play this year.
Would you like to change?
No.
If we pretended that the last hour of this take never took place, and we gave you the opportunity to change right now.
No.
No feelings. No embarrassment. Nothing. Would you like to change?
No. First of all, you should know by now I do not embarrass easily. Secondly, no, absolutely not. I absolutely do not want to change, and I think that just given what we've seen this year and given the style with which the Knicks play defense and how physical they are, I believe that the Hawks would rather play the Heat.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
You're absolutely right.
Catch the show on demand wherever and whenever you want. Just subscribe to us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
Garland in for Canty today, the rest of the show, all week. Time now for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. DeGrom on the IL. They said it's nothing major. Probably just going to be out for a brief stint. Probably what they should have done originally, Rick, is put him on the IL and let him heal 100%.
Yeah, I don't think probably. I mean, go back. I mean, he's a late scratch from his start against St. Louis, which was Tuesday. Goes for an MRI. They find inflammation in his lat. And then all of a sudden, he's making a start on Sunday. But what kind of, you know, training staff they have, I would have a hard time believing that the way he pitches, that, you know, those couple of days off after making him take an MRI and having inflammation in his lat would be enough time for him to be 100% ready to pitch.
It just seemed bizarre that they wouldn't have done that in the first place.
Yep.
Here's what I don't really get yesterday, though. People are still ripping them for then saying, well, not that serious, but we are putting him on the IL. Why? Like, listen, we know what the Mets' history is with handling injuries.
Why what?
Well, people yesterday were ripping the Mets because they felt like they were giving conflicted reports on the situation. He's okay. The MRI says he's fine, but we're putting him on the IL. Like, people seem to have an issue with that. Well, he must not be okay if you're putting him on the IL. Well, no, it's not that serious. It's 10 days and you're being extra cautious here. And there were people that were getting on them yesterday about that, reporters on Twitter and such. And I just don't understand that. We all know it's what should have been done in the first place. And you can rip the Mets for a lot of things. I don't think this is one of them. You know,
it seems ridiculous. I think it's the right move to make. So they're telling you it's not serious, but he needs a little time off. We're going to put him on the injured list. What's to critique?
It's their history,
that?
Dave. No, because it's their history.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they're fighting against is the history. We said this. We had this exact same conversation at the time when he was scratched from his start. And he had structurally everything's fine, but he's got inflammation in his lat. We actually joked around about it. Well, you know how the Mets handle things. This will turn from inflammation to all of a sudden, you know, he'll pitch again and he'll have a torn lat and be on the 60-day IL or something crazy like that. And it did the finger. Thank God it didn't happen that way. But he went out. He pitched five innings.
Right.
He's bunting and everything else. And did something else happen where now it's lowering his back, tightens up. And I think what people were reacting to is, and Carlin, I get what you're saying. They're taking, you know, the old case, or, you know, Captain Literal. What they're telling you is that there's no structural damage. Like, there's nothing torn or anything
this
like that.
This is not a long-term big
exactly
injury.
Right. It's something that needs... There's obviously inflammation in there that needs to settle down before we feel good about him coming back out to pitch, which is exactly what should happen the first time when you made him take the MRI and noticed there was inflammation.
Right. And like we mentioned yesterday, this whole thought that it's the Wilpons and they're just so incapable and everything they touch turns to you-know-what. Well, you know what? That's not the case. The Mets still have a lot of Mets in them.
But, Dave, I've been telling you this for the longest time. Here's my biggest issue with the Mets is, and I'm going to keep saying this, what they need is somebody to manage this team that is going to change the culture inside of that clubhouse. It seems like for too long, everyone just does whatever the hell that they want to do. There's no that doesn't change with ownership or Sandy Alderson coming back. That changes with who's managing the team. Like, there's too many guys that just do whatever the hell they want. Like, do your own thing. Remember that was the credo in the clubhouse?
Yep.
Do your own thing. Well, when you got a bunch of guys doing their own thing, I don't know how conducive that is to winning as a team.
But doesn't that also come, Rick, from very top down? I mean, because we could look at, I mean, maybe Sandy doesn't get enough heat here because of the way that culture has been set up.
No, you're probably right, because he wants to have, I mean, they want Luis Rojas to be a manager that does their bidding and gets all the blame if it goes wrong. I mean, that was evident with the whole firing of Chili Davis. That was something that they talked about for a week, and Luis Rojas didn't know until that day they fired him when they came down. Didn't even ask for his opinion. Just said, hey, by the way, we're going to fight.
Don't care what he thinks.
They could care less. But that, for me, is a big problem with this Mets team. It really is. Is the players, it's too much of a country club, man. Like, the players just can do whatever the hell they want to do.
Well, thank God they're winning games. Because if they weren't winning games, I think this would be a whole heck of a worse conversation right now about this team.
There's no doubt. But I really have to start to look at Sandy here overall. You know, a lot of these issues with injuries and how they've handled them in the past, it's been on his watch. I mean, yeah, he was gone for, what, 2.5 years or so, or 2 years, whatever it was. But a lot of it was on his watch prior to that as well. When they do get criticized for bringing guys back too soon, who's been in charge of that? He has. And if the manager's not making any decisions and guys are allowed to do whatever they want to do, where's that culture going to change until you make a complete, you know, just a complete whitewash from the way down?
Yeah, but it's not just Sandy, though, too, Carl. I mean, even when Brody was here, the whole Jed Lowry thing.
Yeah.
Like, he's got some thing going on with his knee, then all of a sudden you don't see him, and then when you do see him, he's got a full Forrest Gump leg brace on his leg.
Going into battle.
Like, the Cespedes stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they just go through it.
This is just kind of the Mets.
Which has to change, though, Dave, to my point. That has to change. Like, at a certain point, that has to change. Like, and then, I mean, remember the whole thing came out where the Mets made their players pay during the offseason to work out with their trainers?
Yes.
Because that makes sense?
So how do you change it? If it's not, I mean, if it lingered on after, you know, the after Sandy was here, and it continued with Brody, and now it's still here with Sandy, then how do you change this thing?
Well, I think at a certain point, and I get analytics is huge, and you want a front office, they want to make decisions and everything else, but I mean, I don't know how many times do you need to see it in sports just here in New York, where if you bring the right person in to be your coach, that's going to set a foundation that's going to change the culture, how good things can happen. You saw it with the Islanders. You're seeing it right now with the Knicks. You saw it with Joe Judge and the Giants. We're hoping that happens with the Jets and Rob Saleh. It makes a difference. It does.
But until they start treating it like it makes a difference? I mean, I look across the game right now. Who's a manager that we feel like really holds guys accountable? Does Dave Roberts do that?
No.
Yeah. I mean, there are only a few. And I don't know that, you know, Joe Maddon gets to do what he wants to do, but that's in Anaheim now. Other than that, when the position has been devalued as much as it has, doesn't it make it that much more difficult, Dave, to try to establish a culture?
It makes it nearly impossible.
Yeah. I don't know how you're supposed to do that when guys in the room know that you are toothless with anything you can do.
Well, you are just taking
a sheet.
No, but here's the thing, though, too, Chris, and I think you know this, you know, covering sports for as long as you've covered sports, too. I mean, it doesn't also just have to be the manager. I think in certain situations you do need you know, a manager to step up and be that guy when you lack something like that, or you don't have the leadership in the established leadership, the established leadership inside of your clubhouse. Like, I mean, David Wright is gone, right? There's been a void since David Wright left as far as leadership was concerned. And the players have run amok. They have. Like, there's been a lot of stuff that's happened. I mean, you know how much I love Matt, but there was some stuff that happened with Matt. Like, there's been a lot of things that have happened with this Mets team. Like, even the rat raccoon stuff and how Luis Rojas handled that after the game. Like, it just feels like they just get, like, the players just get
always,
to do.
Always, though, with this team. Let's go to Jimmy and Dick Sills. Good morning, Jim.
Hey, guys, I love the show. But I got to admit, I jumped in. It's a beautiful sunny day. Jumped in the car to drive to work, and I listen to you every morning. And I had to go back and check my phone. I had to check the standings because the Mets are in first place. They haven't been competitive in quite a long time, and as a Mets fan, I want to enjoy it. And you guys, your little bashing is, like, a little too much. They're in first place. Not only are they winning games, like you said, Dave, they're in first place in their division.
I understand. Like, I think that's why we don't kill them. Like, I think we're having a fair, honest conversation. If they were sitting here at 11 and 18, I think we would destroy them. I think we're being pretty benign and pretty fair about this. But to say that, I mean, you had to fire the GM because of what's going on. You've had stories all over the place that it's a bizarre culture within the organization. They don't handle injuries well. The manager has embarrassed himself numerous times with speaking to the media. I mean, now you have a rat raccoon situation. I mean, the whole thing. I mean, the Mets don't make it easy to take it easy on them.
And I get it. They're in first place. Can we at least look at it and acknowledge that it's not like they're running away with it in the division? I mean, you know, they haven't come out of the gates blazing here.
No.
They're playing better. They've won five in a row. Enjoy that for what it is right now. But isn't it part of a bigger issue that there's always some sort of stupid little drama with the team that takes away from moments like this when they're playing well?
Yeah, it does. I mean, it just seems like it hasn't stopped. I mean, even so, you start with the whole Jared Porter situation and how that turned out.
That was a terrible situation.
Coming off the heels of the Carlos Beltran situation, which was with the Wilpons. And now you fast forward, okay, new ownership. It's like the same stuff keeps happening over and over again.
That's exactly right. That's exactly
right. And at a certain point,
right,
it's got to stop. Like, I mean, this Jacob deGrom thing, in my opinion, was avoidable. Like, him all of a sudden now having to deal with what he's dealing with was avoidable.
Yeah, you just shut him down.
Mm-hmm. Which is exactly what they should have done.
Take it out of his hands. Listen,
well, no,
you're
he's
too
like
important.
You know, but then it's like, I mean, he's telling you that there's something wrong. I can't, like, he told you, I'm having a problem right now. I can't get loose. I need to be scratched from the start. Goes in for the MRI. Okay, you got lat inflammation. Okay, lat inflammation. I'm shutting you down. You throw over 100 miles an hour. I mean, this is not conducive to you being healthy. So we're going to shut you down. Instead, I got to see pictures of him fielding batting practice, jumping around. Like, that's what you want to see? Like, that's your idea of shutting the guy down and resting the guy?
Optic. Very, very strange optic.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I don't wake up at 4 a.m. to wear a swim shirt.
Looking for more access to the show? Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at DCR on ESPN.
Done nothing to anger Frank Isola, right? Are we in good standing with him, Carlos?
As far as I know, Frank and I have a long-standing mutual respect and friendship that I've always been very proud of.
We'll find out. Let's bring him in. I mean, he's really all over the place. He's a Renaissance man. You can watch him on the Nets pre and post. He's on Sirius. Shut up. Really, just shut up. Let's bring him in. Frank Isola. Good morning, Frank. How are you?
Gentlemen, what's up? I wanted you guys to have me on last week. I wanted to ask Rick about the fight with Tom Wilson. I wanted to know exactly what the code is, the code of conduct in that situation. Come on, Rick.
Which code of conduct?
Well, should he, do you, because I was listening to some guys talk and they said that the enforcers kind of have a code among each other that they don't really pick on guys that they know that they can beat up. What did you make of that whole thing?
No, that was the truth in the past, is that, I mean, there were divisions, really. Like, I mean, the heavyweights would fight heavyweights. Heavyweights would fight heavyweights, and then you'd have the middleweights and everything else. I think the problem with Tom Wilson is that he doesn't really want to fight unless it's advantageous for him. Like, he likes to take advantage of those situations.
But
which I have no respect
for. Remember the fight that he got in Game 7 against Tampa Bay, though? I thought that was, like, kind of a turning point in that game. Remember they came out of the penalty box and he really beat the guy up pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, listen, what makes Tom Wilson special right now is that he's able to really play well. Like, he's a really good player, and he also adds that element of, like, where he kind of, like, tiptoes that line between playing really hard and dirty, and there's not many guys that in the league anymore that will that can keep up with him in that way. So, I don't know. I just don't like when he, I just, I, Frank, I don't like when you take advantage of the situations like that. I have no respect.
I get it. All right, now let's talk about the league where nobody fights.
Nobody fights. All right, so we had a debate in the first hour, and I'm not going to tell you where each of us fell on this, but if you are the Hawks, to a man, if you ask the Atlanta Hawks, who would they rather play in the first round of the postseason, the Knicks or the Heat, you think most of them would say who?
I bet you they would probably still say the Knicks, just because of the experience that the Miami Heat have. The Heat will be a dangerous team because obviously Eric Spoelstra has been through it before, and then, you know, Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo, Andre Iguodala coming off the bench. So one thing, the Heat caught a big break last year because they would have been the lowest seeded team in all three or all four playoff series that they played. So they would have started on the road. You know, so they're young guys like Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, Tyler Hero. They never had to go play in front of the fans in Boston or go on the road in Milwaukee. So that they caught a bit of a break, their younger players. They never had to experience those tough road situations. But I still think the experience – listen, whoever the Knicks play, it's going to be a dogfight because Tom Thibodeau will have those guys ready to play, and the Knicks play hard all the time. So, you know, to think that anybody's just going to go out there and they're going to take four games off the Knicks is not going to be – it's going to be easier said than done.
All right, Frank, but the conversation has been this, is that – and again, we don't know who the Knicks are going to play. We'll see what happens here to finish off the season. Yeah. But as far as, you know, what is the best matchup for the New York Knicks, I think we all have agreed that the best matchup would be – would be Atlanta in the first round.
Yeah,
but in saying that, the conversation coming out of that is, well, even if the Knicks played Atlanta in the first round and they lost, oh, that would be disappointing. Do you look at it the same way?
I mean, you know, that's always going to happen. I mean, there's going to be a bunch of teams that are going to get knocked out in the first round where they're going to look back at their season and say, wow, everything that we accomplished is a disappointment. I don't know about that. To me, it's still two relatively inexperienced teams, really. You know, look at the playoff resumes of both teams. You know, they really haven't accomplished that much. That's why I think getting a guy like Derrick Rose is going to be important for the Knicks, a guy that's been through it before. And obviously Tom Thibodeau and Nate McMillan have coached in a bunch of playoff games. I think it would be disappointing just because I do think that the Knicks fans, and I kind of agree with them, and I think they believe that if the Knicks were to get out of the first round, that they could give Philadelphia a bit of a run for their money because Philadelphia has never been out of the second round. And then all the pressure on the world would be on the Sixers. I think it would be a disappointment if the Knicks lost. I don't think it would be a disappointing season, though, put it that way.
All right, Frank. So when you look at the Knicks as a whole right now, with the lack of the experience that you alluded to a few minutes ago, how concerning would it be versus the notion that they just play so hard all the time that it's not like flipping a switch in the postseason? You know, they're already kind of tuned into that. So which of those plays a bigger role for you, either for or against the Knicks?
Well, I just think, you know, remember, too, when you get to this play-in tournament, and by the way, there's a good chance we could get Lakers-Warriors, so the ratings are going to be off the charts for that game next week. You know, those teams are all going to have some time off, which means that Tom's going to have more time to prepare, which means his team will be more ready than they would have been under normal circumstances. And if you go back when Tom was coaching Chicago, he won a Game 7 on the road against Brooklyn with Nate Robinson as his starting point guard. You know, so Tom has won playoff series where his team has been undermanned. I just think giving him that extra time, I actually think the Knicks' confidence will be sky high. And listen, Trae Young is a good player if they end up playing Atlanta, but you could be physical with him. And I understand he flops all over the court and he gets to the free throw line a lot. But we also know that come playoff time, the referees don't buy that much. If you look at Harden when he was in Houston, Harden would spend the whole season at the free throw line. Then he would get to the playoffs and he would still do all the flopping and the flailing and the referees wouldn't call it. So I just think the Knicks would have an advantage. Plus they'd be playing at home as, you know, things stand the way that they are, which I think would be an edge for them as well.
Frank Isola with us here, breaking down the NBA on 98.7 ESPN. Let me ask you about the Nets. They've scuffled lately. It sounds like Harden is on the verge of returning to the lineup. What's your take on them? Are they fine? Do you have some reservations about them now heading into the postseason?
I thought the win the other night was good, even though, I mean, Denver was missing a lot of guys. So that was a game that the Nets had to have. I thought it was interesting because they went on that stretch where they lost two games in Milwaukee. They lost to Dallas. And they, you know, Steve Nash even said it. Kyrie Irving said it. They were like, well, this is good. This is kind of like a test for us. And my thing was, well, you're failing the test. You did lose the two games in Milwaukee, and you lost in Dallas. And in Milwaukee, in the second game, it was an 18-1 run that Milwaukee had in the fourth quarter. Against Dallas, it was a 13-2 run that Dallas had, which kind of swung the game in their favor. So, to me, they weren't getting it done on the defensive end. And what was a little surprising was Kevin Durant had missed, you know, some makeable shots, and you would expect in a situation like that for him to be the guy that will carry you through. I still believe, though, once Harden gets back, I think they're going to be fine. I think the biggest issue for Steve Nash is going to be, you know, those three guys will be on the court, obviously, to start the game and to finish the game. But Harden has done so well playing with kind of that second unit, which, you know, you know they're going to stagger the minutes. So I would think Harden will come out relatively early in the first quarter so he can play with all of the backups, because I just think it gives them better balance. Because when they, you know, when they didn't have Durant and Durant Kyrie. And Kyrie Irving, Harden was carrying them. I mean, the dude was like, he was getting into the, as we like to call it, the MVP conversation. And then, of course, he hasn't played enough games anymore to be a legitimate candidate. But Harden carried them. He was out there with nobody. So I think for Steve Nash, that's going to be the biggest thing, figuring out the rotation, figuring out how to stagger the minutes of those three guys.
Frank Isola joins us here on the show. Frank, so continuity, obviously, because, I mean, the big three have only played seven games together. You mentioned the defense, and now bringing up Steve Nash. I mean, how much does that concern you, though, moving forward? I know you mentioned the rotations, but his lack of experience when all of a sudden now, I mean, we know how important coaching is in the NBA when you get to the postseason.
I definitely think it's a factor. I think he'll lean on, obviously, Mike D'Antoni a lot. And if he does, that means he'll probably only play seven or eight guys. That's what Mike liked to do when he was coaching. He was a head coach. There were a couple of games this year where, you know, when they lost to Washington, when they had a timeout after Washington made a basket, they decided not to call timeout. They quickly inbounded the ball. It got stolen, and Westbrook hit a three-pointer, which won the game. And then they had the 18-1 run the other day against Milwaukee that I talked about, and he didn't use a timeout. So sometimes I think his feel for the game, it's almost as if he's thinking that he's out there playing and I could settle everybody down. I think sometimes you have to look at it from a coach's standpoint. So there's no question about it. You know, the next playoff game that he coaches is going to be the first one. And you talked about disappointment. You know, for them, it's just like the Lakers. It's championship or bust. Like, if you don't win a championship, it's going to be a major disappointment when you get these three guys together, because you don't know how long they're going to be together. And you look at the history of all of them. I mean, Durant had that significant injury. They've all been injured at certain times this year. So if you get them all healthy for the playoffs, the idea is to go out there and win 16 games. And anything short of that is going to be a disappointment.
If you have all three healthy, Frank, is it an overrated aspect, the defensive part, because they are just going to be able to outscore everybody?
Well, there have been times, though, where they have defended. And the one thing about Durant, he's such a great player on both ends of the court. You know, he very rarely takes a bad shot, and he does defend at the other end. And Kyrie Irving, when he wants to play, you know, it was funny, when they beat Boston, I'm surprised the reporters missed this one that covered the team. So after the game, they asked Steve Nash about Kyrie Irving defensively. They, you know, did he get a bad knock? And Steve Nash said, well, when he's engaged, he could be an excellent defender, which, let's face it, that's Steve Nash saying he's not a good defender only when he wants to be. And there have been moments this year where he's played really well on the defensive end, and you can see what a difference it makes. And I'll tell you what, the other guy, and I've been surprised with this, Blake Griffin has been really good. Like, Blake Griffin did a good job on Jokic. There were moments in that game, the first time they played Milwaukee in that fourth quarter against Giannis Antetokounmpo, Giannis went 1-for-5. In that game a couple of Sundays ago. And that was with, you know, that's with Blake Griffin defending him. So I think they can get after it at times defensively. I think they'll be more locked in come playoff time. And I think it's going to have to start with Kyrie Irving. He's really going to have to be the guy, because too often, I think when he was on Boston, too often earlier this season, He was just floating around on the defensive end.
He is Frank Isola. Frank, thanks for a couple minutes. We know you have to roll for your own show on Sirius, but we will talk to you as the playoffs roll around. Good stuff as always.
All right, guys. Thanks a lot. I'll see you guys.
Absolutely. That, of course, is Frank Isola, who seemed to have no bitter feelings at all towards you, Carlin. So that's
no, he didn't, and I feel very justified in my take this morning.
He didn't agree with you at all.
I wouldn't say that.
Well, it's exactly true.
No, what he said was, I think it'd probably still be... Yeah. It wasn't... They probably still want
to
play.
I mean, if I'm presenting to a jury, Rick, he went in our direction or
that's
Carlin's
not reasonable.
Direction.
I mean, there's plenty of reasonable doubt. In
no, no reasonable doubt.
No.
Stop yourself.
No.
Hey, come on. No, he didn't. He wasn't
he had to
like
process the question.
Oh, come on, you're nuts.
He had to process the question, and basically,
and then he
said,
went on and on about
mind.
The Knicks, and then he went on and on about the Knicks. In other words, he had to process the question. Just the mere fact that he had to process it, as opposed to you two, were just, oh, you're an idiot. Get out of here.
No,
it was not. That's exactly what it was.
You're still going to stand by this, huh?
It's a debatable question.
It's not.
Dave, you know, as much as you like to pound your chest and you know, my takes are my takes and it's true honesty and all that stuff, I'm the same way. I'm not backing off a damn thing.
Yeah, but
here's
the difference. My takes are typically very good. And what you've shown so far since you've been doing this show with us is that that's a terrible take. Carl.
Oh, so the 20 years before this don't count. Really, my career started yesterday morning at 5 a.m.
I think that's when I've paid the most attention to it, yes.
I don't think there's any doubt.
Yes, and so far, that's a take that I am not a fan of at all. All right, are you ready to dip your toe into the water of CMT?
I am, absolutely.
All right, let's dip that toe. Aww.
To cuddle.
Tell you what, Rico. I can chase him down. I'll hold him down for you.
To marry.
I don't want to give up the meat.
Or to trash.
I think I'm emotionally broken.
That is the question.
Yes, we welcome our friend Chris Carlin here. And for him, and for anyone that's new, we don't play it the, I guess, what would be deemed the correct way. Cuddle,
marry,
trash.
We don't play it the right way. That's right. You got it right.
But I told Dave, years from now, this will be the way everyone plays it. Just you wait. So question one here. Jacob DeGrom, 10-day IL, tightness in his right side. The Mets say that MRI came back clean of any issues. However, let's take a different approach with this. Cuddle, marry, or trash Jacob DeGrom as the New York athlete most important to his team?
Carlin.
I'll go first. I'll trash it.
Oh.
I'll trash it. Because, no, I mean, I can't cuddle it. You know, I know how important he is to this team, but it's baseball. It's not the same. I think that where we stand today... I think that Julius Randle is the most important New York athlete to his team.
I will agree with you. I will trash him as well. Here's the thing. DeGrom is the most dominant when he plays. He's going to start 30 games, so he's involved in 20% of the team's games. Randle's involved in every single moment for the Knicks. Take DeGrom off the Mets. They're still probably a decent team. Take Randle off the Knicks. They stink. I'll trash it.
I, too, trash it. And honestly, they can't win DeGrom starts anyway, so what's the difference?
Look at Carlin playing the game. Love it. Love it.
Do what I can.
Zach Wilson was on the field for the first time as a Jet rookie minicamp, asked about working towards being the team's week one starting quarterback.
My focus is to learn the offense, keep getting better every single day, you know, do what I can with the guys around me. And I think the rest takes care of itself, you know, in this position, the coaches want to play the best player and that position's got to be earned. You know, I got to go in there and I got to make sure I do what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, that'll take care of itself.
Just my opinion, if he's not the week one starter, something went horrifyingly wrong. But cuddle, marry, or trash anyone aside from Wilson as the Jets week one starter.
I will, boy, I'm going to trash that. He's got to be your week one starter. He has to be. They don't even have another guy on the roster right now. I mean, I know Carlin keeps mentioning Nick Foles. You're going to have to give up capital to get Nick Foles. Nick Mullins is another guy that's mentioned. But right now, they don't even have that guy. So he has to be your week one starter.
I'd cuddle it. And the reason is I think they still could bring somebody else in. And capital for Nick Foles, it's not going to be much. I mean, not after they just got Justin Fields. You're not going to have to give up really
anything. No, you're right. But why would I give up anything for Nick Foles?
You may not even have to.
For nothing. I mean,
maybe he gets cut. You know, I'm just saying that between now and opening day, I don't want to throw Wilson on the field a play before he's ready to be out there. Probably still the opening week starter, but... I'd cuddle it.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't be horrified if Zach Wilson wasn't, like, today. Listen, if if what they have at the position now, if it was Zach Wilson lost out to James Morgan, yeah, I would be horrified.
Yeah.
But I have to imagine they're going to bring somebody else in. Maybe it's Nick Mullins, who already knows the system. But, I mean, for that reason, I guess I'll cuddle it. Because we don't know what the circumstances are going to be.
James Morgan and Mike White, the other quarterbacks on the roster right now.
Oof. Woof.
Staying with football, Tim Tebow is 33 years old. He's expected to sign a one-year deal later this week, maybe next week, with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Not a coincidence. His former coach from the University of Florida, that would be Urban Meyer, is now in Jacksonville. Tebow is playing tight end for the Jags, we assume. The problem, he never played tight end in high school, college, or as a professional. And that's the position he's now going to play as a pro for the Jags. So I don't know how many people expect him to make the team, but what I'll ask is this, more so I guess from the locker room perspective and what it could do to a team that's hoping to turn things around, cuddle, marry, or trash this move for Urban Meyer?
I would trash it. I think it's complete garbage, and he's 33 years old. You're going to tell me that there's not a 20-year-old or a 22-year-old tight end that was an unrestricted free agent that would have a better chance of making an impact? I'm trashing this.
I could not agree with Carlin anymore, even though he had that awful take in hour one. You have to trash this. This is a media ploy. This is a publicity stunt is what this is. Look at us. We're bringing in Tebow. He's never played the position. He hasn't been in the NFL in 8 years. This is a joke. I'm going to trash this. I don't even want it in the house garbage. Like, I want this right into the outside garbage immediately.
More of a media stunt. Tim Tebow signing with the Jaguars in a sport that he actually has played, like, played professionally, or the New York Mets signing Tim Tebow to play baseball?
Oh, Mets.
Mets.
Yeah, I don't think that's a question. This is almost like the Jonathan Stewart signing for the Giants.
No. Well, why don't you defend Gettleman on that one?
Well, no, I'm not going to defend Gettleman, but you're bringing him in for his locker room. I mean, it's more of a locker room thing, right? The guy's never played tight end. You see when he's trying to catch passes for the Jets?
Yeah, oh yeah.
The one that went off the side of his head?
Is it going to be the spy in the locker room?
Yeah, exactly. Hey, you laugh. That
no,
happens.
No, I'm not.
You're bringing your guy.
Yeah, I'm being serious. Absolutely.
I can't imagine, though, at 33 years old, position he's never played before. You realize the last time he's played a regular season football game was 2012?
Yeah.
Huh.
Jeez. 9 years.
So maybe the Jags don't need him. You know who maybe should think about it is the Purple Birds.
The Purple
Derrick
Birds.
Henry and the Purple Birds. The Ravens against
Tim Tebow's
Derrick
a legend down there.
Henry and the Tennessee.
Yeah, and that's why they brought him in, because he's a legend. You never answered the question, though, by the way, Rick.
Well, but here's what would aggravate guys, right? Like, this is not going to sit well with this. I don't care how good a guy he is. Like, guys will be talking about this. What wouldn't sit well with the guys in the locker room is that this was something that they suggested when he was kind of being pushed out as a quarterback.
And he refused to play tight end.
Exactly. Like, how much do you love football? Do you love it enough to not be a quarterback anymore? And he said, hell no, I want to be a quarterback. Now, all of a sudden, because Urban Meyer gets the job, he's willing to now be a, when he hasn't played it's a regular season game since 2012, now he's ready to do it?
That's a really good question.
So what's the answer?
I give Team Tebow credit.
Oh my
so
God.
I don't want to trash it.
Wow.
Oh, I'll be different. I'll just cuddle it. I'll cuddle it. I don't love it, but I'll cuddle it.
All right.
I've cuddled worse.
I'm sure. Yeah, I've heard stories. You've done more with worse also. So there's
how
some.
How dare you?
Oh, wow. Look
wow.
at RJ.
Randall Jr.
There's
checking in.
There's some audio that I'm going to save for observations involving Bob Baffert and a horse being.
Well, we have to wait 2 days for that?
It's so good.
This is your own fault. Do you realize the amount of pressure that RJ, Santi, and I are under to come up with observations every week?
Oh,
this,
please.
But this fits it to a T, though. It's so good. Cancel culture, a horse. I want to hear from the horse. I'll tell you. I want to hear from the horse. But last one, we'll finish on this. Jay Williams, speaking of cancel culture, canceled on us yesterday. Then he did 4 hours of KJZ, or 2 hours on these airwaves from 8 to 10. And then at 1 o'clock on Bart and Han, this happened.
He starts spreading the news. We bring in Jay Will, who joins us on the Goodyear Hotline.
Ooh,
brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven.
Jay Weezy getting
up
from the nap.
What up, Bart?
Yeah, you sound nice and spry right now. The nap from the nap, bro.
You know it, Bart.
Listen to the energy. He's on time. He's a guest. Jay, I have a minor breaking news. Scheduled once again to join us tomorrow. Cuddle, marry, or trash that Jay Will shows up or Will he get another flat tire or really just avoid us?
It's trash. There's no way. If Carl, you're on the show tomorrow, right?
I am. All week.
No, I'll trash it. There's no way he joins tomorrow. None.
Yeah, I've never felt more confident, excuse me. I'm trashing all this thing. No chance he's going.
Because I believe in the goodness in people and in humanity, I'm going to marry this. I think he shows up, and I think we finally put this all behind us, this ugliness caused by Alan Hahn.
Not going to happen.
It's another one of your takes there, Carlin. He's not joining us tomorrow. He's not joining us tomorrow.
This could be an A-Rod J-Lo kind of engagement.
By the way, J-Lo's back together with Ben Affleck.
Oh, yeah.
How about that, huh?
Bennifer out in Wyoming.
Yeah, 17 years apart, and they've rekindled what they once had.
It's the Tim Tebow of relationships.
Yes.
Thanks for listening to the DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg podcast.
I have nothing left.
Hear more of DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg live weekday mornings from 5 to 8 a.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play ESPN New York 98.7.